We're going to begin in the middle of, we're in the Mamar Hasheni, towards the end of Ois Beis, towards the end of Ois Beis. We kind of digressed last week and got into the discussion of how Hashem dealt differently with the Avos and with the Jewish people in Moshe Rabbeinu. How on the one hand, he did much greater wonders for the Jews in Mitzrayim, while with the Avos he did not. But as we discussed last week, that was not due to the greatness of the Avos. But now we go back to our subject, and that is the adjectives that we use about Hashem. Understanding that any adjective we use about Hashem is not really meant as a definitive description of who Hashem is. It's just a way of relating to Him in a very vague way, and often really just for the purpose of defaulting and saying who He's not. So now he continues with this, and he says, "V'nikra oisai chacham leivav." Yes, we find places where Hashem is referred to as the wise. Mipnei shu etzem ha-chokma, ve'ein ha-chokma midoloi. The Bahir also, we have to understand that this has an essentially different meaning than it does by people. By a person, intellect is a quality that he has. Intelligence is a quality that a person has. And the wisdom that he acquires through that intelligence are external things that he absorbs, that he studies, that he comprehends. With Hashem, it's not like that. It's not that he has this talent of wisdom and therefore he's able of understanding all the truths in the world much better than we do. No. It's really much before that. He's not wise in the sense that we call wise. He is wisdom. Who etzem ha-chokma? He is wisdom, meaning he invented all the wisdom we know. It's like we discussed the other day. He created the logic that we work with. He is the source of all wisdom. And therefore, it's a completely different plane than any wisdom of a person we'd be talking about. Ein ha-chokma midoloi. It's not like wisdom is an attribute that he has. And then when you see us talk about Hashem being strong, there also it doesn't mean that Hashem is capable of overcoming heavier things. No, it's once again just a way of expressing the things we see about Hashem. And here also, the way of illustrating this point is with the famous annoying question. I'm not sure if he mentioned it here the other day or not. But the famous annoying question that people ask is Hashem, can Hashem create a rock that's too heavy for him to lift? Right? Kind of like a silly question. I guess presumptuous people would call it a philosophical question. But it's kind of a silly question. Well, what's really the answer to this question? Right? Meaning, someone who's asking this question means to say, have a checkmate. Right? I got you from either angle. Can he make such a rock? If he can, that means that there's a limit to his strength. If he can't make such a rock, that means that there's a limit to his capability. Right? So really, the answer to this question lies in what the Gemara is saying here. If strong by Hashem would mean the same strong as it means by us, you'd be right. What reaches further? His capability or his strength? But let's say I tell you there's somebody who can make a stones of infinite weight. Let's say I just tell you that about Hashem. Can you make a stone that's so heavy that it would drop even in outer space? The answer is no. He can't. Oh, so he is limited in how heavy he can make a stone. Is he limited in how heavy he can make a stone? No. He can make a stone of any weight, and yet it won't drop in outer space. He can make it even heavier than that. It still won't drop in outer space. He can make it even heavier. It still won't drop in outer space. Because outer space is just a system that doesn't... It's got nothing to do with the weight. So, when we're talking about Hashem, usually strong means he's capable of countering strength with counterforce. And therefore, the question is, where do we reach the limit? how much weight can he counter? But when you realize, when we say strong about Hashem, it doesn't mean that, whereas I can lift a 500-pound weight, he can counter even more weight than I can. No, with Hashem, weight is simply not an issue, just like outer space. It's just not an issue. So that's what we mean when we say Hashem is strong. Sure, he can overcome things that we need strength to overcome, but it's not because he's working with that same sort of strength. He doesn't need to counter it in the way we counter it. These things are just not issues by him. So therefore, again, we call him strong because what we see him doing, in our terms, manifests as strength. But it's really not strength in the sense that we talk about it. Now, I just want to mention one point, because someone asked here the other week, when we were saying how the truth is that there's no way of describing anything about Hashem's essence. All the terms we use are just terms we can associate with, in terms of describing the things we see him doing. But Hashem's essence is completely not, and it's not comparable, nothing that we can relate to in any way resembles Hashem's essence. Somebody asked us that universally agreed upon. And I understood afterwards that apparently this person was alluding, and I want to make a point of spelling this out, because this is a fundamental mistake and a dangerous mistake that I've heard people make. What I think he was alluding at was, in the school of Kabbalistic thought, in Kabbalah you certainly do see a lot of talk about, so to speak, body parts. A very big part of the whole study of Kabbalah is understanding what they call the Shir Kaima, Kibayachal, the structure of the heavenly body. And it goes into very great detail. There are different famous Midas that we talk about that actually, in Kabbalistic terms, represent different divine parts of the divine body. Like, for example, you know, in Sfirat Ha'Omer, in your Siddur, if you look by Sfirat Ha'Omer, it's a whole bunch of Midas there, right? There's Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Yisoid, Hoid, Yisoid, Netzach, Malchus, right? And on top of that, there's Chokhmah, Bina, Das, Keser. All these things are Midas that actually, these are what we call the Midas that Hashem works with, that actually are representative of what you might call the heavenly body. For example, the Chokhmah and Bina and Das all represent the head. Then you have the Chesed represents the right arm, and Gvura is the left arm, Tiferes is the chest, and Netzach is the right leg, Hoyt is the left leg, and Yisrael is what's in between. And there's a lot of analysis on that, and Mamish gets to the point of, in Kabbalah, the hairs of the beard, the hairs of the head, the hairs of the chest. And people take that to mean that there's actually, obviously it's not physical, it's spiritual. All these things are completely spiritual. Right? The hairs represent very, very deep spiritual concepts. But I remember I was once sitting in shul, and I heard people arguing. People dabble in Kabbalah. You read a Kabbalah book or two, you see that no. The earlier, you know, the Rambam and the others laid down as a fundamental principle of belief that Hashem has no body of any form. But actually, in Kabbalah, it turns out that there is what we call a heavenly body. Right? I heard somebody saying, apparently, in people who go to Kabbalah courses, right, which are very popular nowadays, I heard someone saying very emphatically, very confidently, that actually, no, Rambam was wrong. Kabbalah teaches that Hashem certainly does have a body of sorts, the divine body, what we'll call. I think that that's what was being alluded at by the question the other week. But here we have to clarify something fundamental. And this is very much emphasized by the Mekubalim themselves, by the great Kabbalists, before they actually go ahead to discuss these things. The Ben Ish Chai spends chapters warning you before you approach these subjects. The Leshem, many others, obvious the truth is, Ramchal also says this, that all these things that we're talking about is what we might call a heavenly form that Hashem brought into being through which he operates. It's true. he might connect to our world through this heavenly form, which is a form that encompasses all of our existence, right? When we're talking about it, doesn't mean just that there's a giant body out there. That's the show. We're talking about a form, a heavenly form, completely spiritual form, that encompasses all of our existence. But on the very, very spiritual, refined, abstract level, it is a form. It's a spiritual form. But even that is not who Hashem is, chas v'chalila. This is emphasized very strongly with very dire admonitions. And that's why we hear people just throwing these terms around without knowing what they're talking about. It is an absolute given that Hashem's essence is something incomprehensible. In any way and in any term, the closest term that the Kabbalists use for it is Ein Sof, the infinite. But even that, they say, is something that we can't even really use to relate to Hashem's essence. It's just, they say, there's no talk there. We just can't talk about it. The only thing we discuss about Hashem are the elements of Him that He revealed to us through which He deals with us. And those are the different midas we talk about. And on a deeper level, it's this form that the Mikubalim talk about, which is also simply something that He brought into being, through which He operates, through which He connects to us. But Chas v'Shalom, to understand that this is an actual description of Hashem's essence. Hashem's essence remains beyond the realm of any human comprehension whatsoever. I just thought that it's important to bring this out because people do make this mistake. People start messing with Kabbalah without being properly initiated and come away with bad misconceptions. Now we move on.
But the relationships, are the relationships true? What meaning? Why down? Like, these forms are related to each other. Like, you saw this related to Parnassa. So, if you have issues with your sword, and you're not going to be successful in Parnassa.
We'll take that as an example, right? There's no question that these are things that have very, very great bearing on us. And these are things that we can connect to in different ways. However, it's certainly not an issue of, like I saw somebody write, you know, rheumatism, rheumatoid problems come from a lack of the proper oils in the joint area. Somebody wrote, so therefore it's a good idea to consume a lot of oil. So a doctor wrote, just in a very basic way, any basic biologist understands that when you consume oil, the body breaks it down into different forms. Who said that it's going to appear in the form of oil at your joints? The olive oil doesn't slide to your elbow, right? It gets broken down, it turns into blood, the body does what it does with it, and the body manufactures its own oils. It can't just go and say, well, if I'm Israelite, Pope Innocent wanted to live longer, he wanted to prolong his life when he thought he was dying, so he drank young men's blood. I think that all he got from that was indigestion, but he died short time afterwards. But that was what he did. He drank young men's blood. He had old blood. Young men live on young blood. He drank it. You have to know what you're doing. So there's no question that what we do connects to these things, absolutely. How that works is certainly not an issue for guesswork. If you hear on authority that something works for something, alright? So you're taking it on that authority's authority. But to come and say, well, this kind of, you know, if my right arm is hurting me, all the things that are associated with chesed, because the right arm represents chesed, and that will solve the problem. There are people who operate in that way, but it's a cheap version. It's not, you know, it has to be really based on understanding the deep biology, if we'll call it that, of how these things work. Okay. In other words, only take these things from a real authority on the subject. Okay. Omar Kuzari, we'll move on. It's fine. You explained away the different attributes of Hashem. But how are you going to explain away things about Hashem that are clearly in the physical realm? Right? When you say that Hashem sees, isn't seeing a physical function? Shemea, he hears. Medaber, he speaks. Kaisev ha'aluchais, he wrote on the luchais. Isn't that a physical function? Yered al ha'sinai, Hashem came down on ha'sinai. One can only come down somewhere if one is a limited unit. If Hashem just fills all of space, all of existence, how would he come down on ha'sinai? Wouldn't coming down, descending, be a physical function? V'sameach b'masav.
Hashem is everywhere.
Right?
So, where is he coming down from, or where is he going? If he's all existence.
That's basically what the Khuzar King is asking. He's saying, you're saying that he's all existence. You're saying that he's everywhere, and that he just defies space and anything physical. But your Torah says that he came down on ha'sinai. That's what he's asking. Your Torah says. That's his question. Your Torah says that he sees, hears, writes. And your Torah also says, Sameach b'masav, sometimes he's pleased with his people. Mis'atzev alivoy, sometimes he's saddened by what they do. Aren't all these things very human functions? Writing, seeing, hearing, coming down.
Regretting,
right? That's the epitome. Regretting. Or being pleased.
What is Hashem regretting if Hashem is the one who created everything?
That's the question. So that's what the King of Khuzar is asking. It seems. What he's getting at is, don't tell me that Hashem is all that great and beyond all these things. You see that Hashem says something, and I can't say these words, but what the King of Khuzar is asking is, he decides he made a mistake.
He's pretty smart guy so far. I mean, so far it seems so obvious the answer, except for regretting. I'm not sure I get the question.
Okay, good. Good. The truth is that some of these things we've seen them discussed earlier, and here I'd wonder if this is simply a manifestation of the understanding that this book is not actually a real discussion, and that the questions are being asked for the purpose of answering the answer. I don't know, but that's a guess. You know, I can't take on the historian. But he's asking this question. Omar Achola, so that the sage answers. Haloi dinisiv lecha b'shoyte tzedek shenchid b'midoysa. I've already given you the mashal of that judge, right? When you have a judge who all of his business is business, right? He's a business-like judge. He rules according to the books, and that's all. There's no personal emotions involved. He's completely impersonal and detached. And he is the supreme judge of this nation. He's actually running the nation's affairs, and everything goes right. Now, if we see this judge, people come to him for judgment. Let's say he's a judge who deals not just with litigation and crimes, but sometimes people are deserving of certain rewards, etc., according to the laws of the state. Again, there's nothing personal here. It's not even his money. He's representing the state, and there are laws. And three people come to his court, and they come out. Each of them was awarded with a hefty prize. Each one comes out with a $50,000 check. A person might say, the judge is in good spirits lately, because that's how it manifests. Well, actually, it isn't true. It's completely impersonal. There's no feeling involved. He's ruling according to the books. But it comes across as the judge is in a generous mood lately. Right? Or the goyzer al acherim barisas botem v'achrimoysam. But then he issues an order that person's home should be destroyed. Oh, yisablu lav behefech. We'll say, oh, the judge had it in for so and so. He's angry at them. Now again, it's an understandable way of expressing it. the judge issued a wrathful ruling. But it does not really reflect the judge's essential emotions at all. He's ruling according to a system. And yes, with the same feeling, he can award this one $50,000 and decree that that one's house should be destroyed. And in this case, we'll say, he was proud of the guy. Right? He ruled favorably. In this case, we'll say, he exhibited wrath. Well, actually, there was no wrath and there was no favor. There was no happiness and there was no anger. He ruled according as was appropriate in each case, impersonal. Okay? So therefore, he says, when we talk about Hashem being happy, regretting, what happens if you see a carpenter build a structure and then bang it down? Anybody watching will say he changed his mind. But maybe that, what?
Or he lost
his mind. Or maybe, no. Maybe that building was meant to serve a certain function, but now its function was completed. He knocked it down. So all these expressions express not what Hashem is essentially feeling, they express the way it's perceived from our end. The way it manifests, the way it plays out on our end. And that's how it works with the regretting as well. It's in fact a very strange expression, Hashem regretted it. No, Hashem did not regret anything. Where does it say that Hashem regretted it? It says about by the Mabul, before the flood. It says Hashem regretted that he had made man because of all the evil. Which means that when Hashem decided I'm going to wipe out mankind, that manifested, it came across as Hashem regretted, said, forget the whole deal. We know that Hashem didn't regret it, right? He made a point of preserving Noah. He made a point of keeping the world going. But this is the way it came across. And this is what we mean by all these things. Now, we say that Hashem spoke. So the king of Kuzar is asking, well, isn't speaking a physical function? Right? So he answers this the way we've already answered it earlier in the sefer. I remember back at Sinai. So the Jewish people heard the voice of Hashem. What did that mean? What does Hashem's voice sound like, right? Was it baritone? Does Hashem have a high-pitched voice? Hashem has a voice at all? What do you mean that they heard the voice of Hashem? So he says, there also, it came across to us as hearing Hashem speaking. But what was it actually? Mishu'avir. Oh, if Hashem can create a world, he can also create sound waves. And he can make those sound waves hit your ear. No, there's no... There was a voice, but that's not Hashem's essential voice. Hashem does not have a voice because Hashem is not physical. Yet, you heard the voice he created with which he had you hear what he wanted you to hear.
You could hear something today as one voice, and tomorrow as
another voice. That's right. The Nevi'im did. They actually, right, different Hashem appeared to different Nevi'im in different forms, with different voices. The Kara Gufim Nif'olim Le'et Sinai. He says, yes, when we talk about Hashem speaking, when we talk about Hashem writing, right, all it means is that Hashem can make things happen from its Stirim B'Diburai, and at His command, things take form. Kasher Itztayru HaShemayim Va'aretz. Just as at Hashem's command, the sky, the heavens and the earth took form, so too, at Hashem's command, letters took form on the tablets, words took form in the air and hit your eardrums. V'nikra Kosev U'Medaber, and will express it that he wrote on the tablets, that he spoke into your ear. But what actually happened? Hashem created sounds in the same way he created anything else. The voice that you heard speak and the words that you saw inscribed were not anything different than the heavens and the earth being created. Hashem created these things at His command. That's all.
Just like the word out of the text. What is nature?
That's right.
Hashem.
Yep, yep, yep. The case. And he says, the same applies for prophecy. Nevi'im have revelations. What do they see? They hear a voice speaking to them. What are they hearing? He says it's all the same thing. V'chein mitzdailis min ha-geshem ha-dak ha-ruchni. He says all of the revelation, all of the visions that the Nevi'im see is the same idea, it's just creation on a much more higher spiritual level. But these are spiritual creations. He says, yes, prophecy is another level of this. They're not seeing Hashem, nor are they seeing, nor are they hearing his voice. They are saying things that he created to reveal to them on a much higher, finer, more refined spiritual level, which was already in the realm of Ruach HaKodesh, prophecy. Also, Hashem might cause certain things to come into being that actually represent his presence. For example, a pillar of cloud. A pillar of cloud represented the presence of the Shekhinah. What was this? This is also something that Hashem brought into being as a representation of his presence. So that too, Nikal Derech HaVor Hashem Bilvad. Really? These are things that Hashem brought into being. When you say Hashem is a cloud? No. But yet, they bowed to the cloud when it appeared in the Midbar, as though Hashem appeared. And the way the Pasuk expresses it is, Vayirah Kvoid Hashem, the glory of Hashem appeared. The cloud appeared as the glory of Hashem because Hashem was representing his presence through this cloud that he brought into being. And in that sense we say, we might even call it Hashem, because Hashem is representing himself through this cloud. And that's also what we mean when we say that Hashem descended upon our Sinai. It means the same thing. Hashem brought into being something that represented his presence, a fire, a divine fire, that descended on our Sinai. We saw that representing the presence of Hashem manifesting on our Sinai.
That was a representation.
That's right.
Of Hashem. It never says that, that was Hashem.
Oh, so he's saying that even when the Pasuk says Hashem came down, what it really means is Hashem represented himself through these means on our scene. And that's what came down. Like you might say, when you see a black car with tinted windows, you can't see through anything, right? And they say, there's the president. Right? Everybody's in awe. But it's not the president, it's a car. Now, so that's what we mean when we talk about Hashem writing, speaking, going places, etc. It all means this. And he says, and we'll yet elaborate on this further when we get there. Okay. So that's how the sage defends this issue. Now, Amar Kuzari. So the king of Kuzar says, okay, Emoshe Tienitzo Mikol Hamidos Acholin Ischayev Ribui. Fine, I accept everything you said until now. All the different attributes that we see described, all the adjectives, even the different functions of Hashem, you've explained. And therefore, yes, you have lifted Hashem above the realm of defined unit, any sense of physicality, etc. But there remains one philosophical problem that you'll have to deal with according to your understanding of Hashem, which we've already touched on a few times throughout this Sefer. We're going to touch on it again. That is will. This was a philosophical problem. By us, it's a given. We're used to the idea that Hashem wants things. And sometimes Hashem's will is fulfilled, sometimes it's not. Right? Now, Shatami Yachesai says, you do attribute at least will to Hashem. But philosoph Marchikoi Seminar. Whereas the philosopher does not. The philosopher says, it can't be that Hashem has any sort of will, because that itself will be compromising his greatness. How's that? So let's think about it. This is a philosophical problem.
If
what's that?
If it it's a precursor to doing something.
It's a precursor to doing something, but it also denotes that there might be a change of state by Hashem. Why did Hashem decide at one point to make the world? Why didn't he decide to do it previously? This is a question that bothered the philosophers. Right? Or, if Hashem wants you to do something, does that mean that if it doesn't happen, you're disappointed in? Could it be that Hashem would be disappointed? Could it be that Hashem wants something, and in order for that to happen, he's missing something until it happens? Want, by definition, means that you're missing something that needs to be fulfilled. Could you say that about Hashem? Therefore, the philosophers developed the whole understanding that we saw back in the beginning of the Sefer, that no, actually Hashem is above will as well. And anything that happens just kind of radiates from Hashem automatically. But there's no decision. Because the way they understood it, if Hashem decides to make a world, that means that in as much as there's no world, Hashem is missing something, and Hashem needs a world in order to be fulfilled. How are we going to explain this? Because we certainly do understand that Hashem does things consciously. We do not believe in an unconscious Hashem from which things radiate automatically like the philosophers believe. How will we explain this?
Well, isn't it in some way similar to the way Hashem has created man, and the fact that we need a feeling? There are things that Hashem has created, he's still leaving us.
That's okay to say about things that Hashem created, but can we say about Hashem himself? That's already more problematic. To say that Hashem is missing something that needs to be completed? That's his question. Inasmuch as he's saying that Hashem wants something, that means that without that something, Hashem is not fulfilled. That's the problem. So let's see.
Hashem is willing something that is not here, or is he willing something that he wants
to be? Well, it's both. There are both. Hashem willed the world into existence. That means that Hashem at some point felt that I need a world. Hashem needs something? Let's see where the sage goes with this. Let's see. I don't want to spend too much time on dialogue. But very briefly, we have to move on.
Right, we have computers today that we didn't have at the beginning. It's Hashem allowing us to create new worlds.
Okay, but let's go back to a more basic level. Hashem himself. Was Hashem fine without a world? That's the question. If he wasn't, then Hashem is missing something. If he was, why'd he make it?
That's why he created the world.
What? So was Hashem missing something?
He was.
Could Hashem be missing something?
Can he still be missing something?
Before he made the world. That's the question. See, this is the philosophical problem we're contending with. How can you say that Hashem wants something, which implies that without it, he would be lacking? Can you possibly say that Hashem would ever be lacking? If Hashem made a creation, does that mean that without the creation, Hashem would be lacking? That's the philosophical problem here.
We already talked about how Hashem isn't governed by time. We're governed by time. So we're thinking before and after. With Hashem, there is no such thing.
That's right. That's right. That's what we discussed back in the beginning of the Sefer. That's right. And that's true. The truth is that that's why Chazal also say that don't stop thinking about what happened before him, because you'll just go crazy, you'll just get into problematic places. This is really the problem that the philosophers had, and therefore they draw the conclusion that no, it can't be that Hashem wanted something, it can't be that he wanted a creation, because that would mean that without the creation he wasn't fulfilled, and therefore it must be that he did not consciously create the creation, it just kind of radiated automatically from him. That was the philosopher's conclusion, but we don't believe that, and the question is, how do we explain it then? So I'm out from it. So, the sage says, "V'karavnu el ha'atzala im v'yitayin aleinu b'yesa me'achefetz." He says, you know what? If we've reached the point in our discussion where the whole problem is, how do we explain Hashem's will? We're already in a good state. Remember, at the beginning, you just thought Judaism was one big mess, the king of Kuzah. Right? He says, if that's already the problem, the only problem we have left to contend with, we're fine. We're in a good situation. No, Mother. So he says, what we would answer is as follows. He says, you know what? You have a good philosophical question, but you're not going to get around it anyways. You don't have a way out of it. Because, he says, Ata philosopher, you, philosopher, Ma'av dobar asher sometz l'cho ha'shamayim soviv. Tell me, what is it that causes the whole orbit to turn. What is it that causes all of space? By the way, you have to realize, space is not haphazard. Right? There's a whole balance and orbit that is a lot of interaction. And our position on Earth very much depends on a lot of other planets and stars orbiting in the right way that causes a magnetic field that keeps everything in the right position. This requires a lot of preciseness, of precision.
Gravitational.
Right. So now, Veinatia Bitruasa. And note that that whole orbit runs perfectly without ever deviating. And it's intricate. It's complicated. It's designed. The Kadur Haaretz Merkaz Oymed Ben Tzeisai Mibuinatia V'loy Sibo. Okay, here he's using geocentric understanding. But it's the same idea. He's saying, while you have Earth standing stationary in the middle without moving. Okay, that's not so, but that's not doesn't really matter because it's the same point. On the contrary, the way Earth turns on its axis and the way the Earth revolves around the Sun requires that same level of exact precision as the way they understood it. The truth is that I shouldn't say so necessarily that that's not true either, right? Einstein at the end of the day came up and said that there is no absolute motion. You can never really determine what's moving what.
How do you explain meteors falling out of the sky?
What's that? Oh, but he's saying even more than that. Forget the meteors. What's going on 24/7, all the time, regularly? How do you explain all that? But some say that a coil, amashu olav me'akamus va'echus va'tmunos. And also, how will you explain all of the perfection of this world? Something arranged everything in the exact right proportions, formulas, etc. To realize that we just talked about the galaxies, but Earth also is a very perfectly running machine. Forget the human body, but the big picture. What's that? Earth was made by Hashem. And it's a perfectly running machine. 1 minute, wait. It's a perfectly running machine. The way the sun, Earth interacts with the sun, and interacts with the moon, and the four seasons work out exactly right according to the angle at which Earth approaches it. And then all the different systems of Earth, in which, for example, again, perfectly oiled, how the sun works with the water, right? It evaporates the water, brings it up into the clouds, and then the winds come and push it over to the area that needs watering, and then the atmosphere changes and causes the clouds to condense and actually drop down as rain, precisely on which spots need that water. The sea, by the way, is a very big air conditioner. Right, the sea is an air conditioner. The sea is very important in stabilizing temperatures around the Earth. How's that? The winds of the sea carry climates from one place of Earth to another and balance out. It brings heat from the hotter places to the colder places, cold from colder places to hotter places. The sea needs to be twice as much as land, as dry land, because of the service that it provides for dry land. All this is carefully planned and designed. This is an intricate machine. So now, what you see in the science books is that these are the wonders of Mother Nature. You see, science, they don't believe in anything, but they'll write nature with a capital N. I remember saying, because scientists are so excited about how perfect it all is. And what's so amazing is that it happened by chance. Right? So, here, he's still at the point in time where they were intelligent. It was before they decided that these things can happen by themselves. But at that point, it was axiomatic that these things don't happen by themselves. This is before we even get into the human body, right? So, something is finding it. They didn't create themselves, nor can you decide that any particular creature created others, because it itself has to have been created. Now, so, something you want to say, the philosophers, you're going to be caught somewhere in the middle. This is what he's already pointed out earlier. Hashem, you're saying, is too high above these things. How do these things work? That we already said, like you pointed out. They call that the force of nature. That's what they called it. The force of nature orchestrates these things. So as he already said, but what is the force of nature? When you actually work backwards, in their terms, when you actually work backwards and try to pinpoint exactly what it is, it's nothing. It's what makes everything work right. But what is it? The answer can only be, like you said, whoever it is that makes all those things happen is the same one that made the Aseres HaDibros appear. So there certainly is some will operating in the world. You can't get around that. You can ask all the philosophical questions you want, but you can't get around the fact that there definitely is will operating in the world. So you want to say, yeah, but that's not Hashem, that's the force of nature. Whatever it is. So we're calling it Hashem. Right? There definitely is will at work here. So all the philosophizing is not going to help with that. Right? If you can come and show me that it simply doesn't add up, I can prove to you that human beings should not have two eyes, they should have three. Black on white! But they have two eyes! So you have a problem with will, but you see will operating everywhere. It's like a mushroom that they say, that there was once a blind man in some place, some building. He was trying to get out. He found a big double door. Sure, this is the exit. Opens the door, big door. Finds himself in a closet. He goes back, starts feeling his way around. He's trying to find the exit. Feels a much thinner door. Now, if that big door is a closet, this is obviously not the exit. He continues trying to feel his way around. Seeing man comes along, asks him, what do you want? I want to get out of here. The seeing man takes him over to the little thin door. He says, here, I'm going to help you out. He says, one minute, this can't be. This can't be the exit. Why not? Well, if that huge door over there was a closet, how can this be the exit? So the seeing man tells him, you know what, logically you're right, 100%, but the fact is, this is the way out. This is the exit. So that's what he's basically telling him here. Philosophy, we see will at work. You can't get around it. So obviously there's will. What will we do with that? Stick it in your pipe and smoke it. We've already discussed earlier, back in the beginning of the Sefer, possible approaches, how we would deal with it. But he's saying, once the reality is established, philosophizing about it is no longer relevant. So he says, yes, call it what you want. Whatever it is that made the galaxies run according to the way they run, that same entity with a capital E, Samavir Mitztayer B'Shem Aseres HaDvarim, the Samamichtav Mitztayer B'Chos Baluchos. That same entity that created the galaxies created the words inscribed on the Luchos and created the words, the sound waves that came through the air in the form of the Ten Commands. If you want, call it will. You don't like the word will. Call it will, call it thing, call it whatever you want. But you see will in operation, we call it Hashem. Okay. Some might say that.